Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
And you're very welcome back to the Huddle Breakdown. It feels like it's been months since we sat on a call and recorded a podcast for you. I think it's actually been like 2 or 3 weeks at least, so apologies for our absence. There hasn't been much going on in terms of games. Our schedules haven't linked up in the way that we would have liked. But we're back now and back on time for the transfer window deadline. We are recording this at 6 p.m. on Thursday, so if there are any transfers late on tonight, we will not have touched on them. So this podcast is going out on Friday. We recorded it on Thursday night when we could get together. So I said to the lads, if Lionel Messi signs for Celtic in the space of the next couple of hours, we won't be talking about it. So in case you're wondering why we're not talking about that, that is why. So welcome along to the show. Alan is with me as always. Alan, how are you? Welcome back.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, good. Lovely. Full of joy.
And Jucko James is with me as well. We're all very cheerful today. This is going to be a fun listen for everyone involved. People have been dying for us to come back for the last couple of weeks just to bring a bit of cheer into their lives. So James, it's a perfect time. Transfer deadline day.
It is. I've spent the last week like a beached sperm whale laying on a beach, hoping that I don't get harpooned with my pale whiteness. So I have a slight pinkish hue, and that's, if it's hurting people's eyes that are silly enough to watch this on YouTube. So I was following all the transfer window fun, water edge side in the Caribbean. Let's get into it. Let's talk about all the good news that's been blossoming.
Okay, so we'll run through all the rumors and all the signings. That should take about 20 seconds, and then we'll figure out how to fill some airtime over the next 40 minutes or so. Right.
Sounds like my wife's poor experience on vacation.
I mean, we're back. Cut the show. We're done. We're never coming back.
We talk about the B team and the Lowland League. Maybe let's talk about that.
Right. We may as well start with the one that broke last night, meaning Wednesday night. And that is Adam Ida from Norwich is probably going to come in as a loan signing. Seems to be a backup to Kyogo, a rival for O. I don't particularly know why or where this has come from. In terms of quality signings, I'm not going after him as a human being, because he actually, I've met him before. He's a great guy, great character. He works hard. I will put that all down. But in terms of the quality marking that Brendan Rodgers has asked for, I'm sorry, but Adam Ida is not going to be the guy who pushes Kyogo for that number one spot at Celtic. I don't understand where this transfer has come from. It seems like a panic thing. Even by a panic standpoint, I don't understand where this transfer has come from. For those who haven't seen much of them, and I understand if you haven't, because he's been playing championship football for most of it, he's a big centre forward. I think he's 6'3". Decent in the air without being that good. Decent in the box without being particularly threatening. His finishing is good when he can get his touch correct, but his touch is often not correct. So, it's a weighted either way. And the final thing I would say, the best description, and it's the description I gave the lads, is that he has the hold up play of Giakoumakis without having any of the finishing to actually improve on him as an overall player. I think this is a stinker of a signing. He hasn't been able to make an impact on Norwich in the low levels of the Championship. He's not going to be the man who's going to come and score 25 goals for Celtic this year, Alan. That's as harsh as I'll ever be on another Irish player again. So I just want to clarify, that is on the player himself based on the standards that I would want from a Celtic signing, not on himself as a person. So
of course.
What do you make of this signing?
Follow that. Thanks, Andy. given he's Irish, I can't think of a more damning indictment than testimony than I've just
heard. Given that I was Liam Scales' fanboy because he was Irish, I think it's a fair thing that I give my honest opinion.
Yeah, no.
It's all used up, Andy. You got nothing left for poor Ida.
I was wondering when you're.
I've only got room for one Irish Celt in my heart.
I wondered when you were going to start being honest and stop pussyfooting around the issue. I'll be honest, I've never seen the guy play, right? But I've listened to people who have watched him a lot, and I've done the sort of data bit. And yeah, he just looks like a really bad footballer, unfortunately. It seems like he's, what I'm told is, I believe his best performance for Ireland was away in Portugal, when his job was to basically run and press and harry the defenders for 90 minutes because he never had the ball. And brilliant. It's really going to be useful in the Scottish Premier League. It doesn't look inspiring. It looks like he's got all the worst bits of Ollie Burke with it. And some of the best bits if he's a pressing monster. Listen, I can't get too upset about this because, you know, I think with Kyogo and Maeda as strikers, I think Abada can play do good things in that role. And with O, it's not something I think, you know, that's going to cause us too many issues. It almost doesn't matter who you have in the centre forward position if you're not going to give them the ball in the 6-yard box. Frankly, I think that's more of an issue for me than who's actually got that shirt at the moment. So yeah, it's not great, but I don't think, in the grand scheme of things, I don't think, unless Kyogo gets injured tomorrow, of course, which the way things are going this week, he may do. But yeah, I can't get too excited about it. But yeah, it looks a very poor signing.
I think what's most disappointing about this, James, though, and probably why I'm a little bit more riled up about it than usual, is that it's almost like we hit the reset button from last year, where we had our transfer business done before the January transfer window came around. Same with the summer. We almost knew who Celtic were bringing in the door before the transfer windows happened. That's how most good clubs run. And I know that we've spoken about, you know, the potential issues with that as well, and some of the deadwood that has been left over from that strategy with Ange. But this seems like we are back to Shane Duffy coming in transfer deadline day to be the saviour of the transfer window, to sort of pander to fans and say, we didn't do completely nothing, we brought in this guy.
I think he might be emblematic of the club having reached a fork in the road. And I talked about this several weeks back, about the risk of almost like an intersign power struggle within the club relative to what Rodgers may have thought he was signing up for coming back to the club and strategically trying to make Celtic relevant in Europe again, and what the kind of strategic vision is of the leadership of the club, whether that's at the board level or the recruitment level. And I think that does flow downhill, by the way. I mean, I know that the recruitment team's the convenient punching bag with all of this, but I suspect a lot of this is occurring above their level. And, you know, it comes down to what's being served up as options to Rodgers from a budgetary perspective and availability perspective, and trying to get those people to come to Celtic. And I think some of that is just not a great situation for the club to be in. So I could see a situation where they're bringing Rodgers options that meet the criteria that are being set, not by him, but by the board, and not even by the recruitment team, and saying, you know, these are the criteria. We're not going to pay him more than 20 grand a week or whatever that might be. And they got to meet this age profile. And, you know, this is the categories that we have. And oh, by the way, there's no post, you know, Christmas European football for Celtic. So you're talking about, you know, what, 16 games left or 15 or 14 or whatever we're down to now for loan players. What's the profile for them? So it's just not a great situation relative to what's going on in the market dynamics. So I think the issues here are far more strategic. And I think that the EDA siding is emblematic of that, that, you know, the fact that there's no buy option to this, this looks like a triage signing because the manager does not feel he has enough depth at the striker position, which again, I think is reasonable given that Kyogo's walking around with one shoulder. And, you know, this guy does have a different profile. Now, is it a profile that I haven't looked at him closely yet, so I'm not going to comment. I don't know is my answer. I took a peek at some of his history. I'll do one of my normal benchmarking exercises when they announce it officially, and probably put a thread out and maybe comment on it here next week. But so I can't judge or, you know, offer any insight there. But I think what he looks like suggests to me that this is evidence that I don't want to necessarily call it, because there is a positive way to spin this, meaning that if what's been served up to Rodgers has been clearly not of a level that he finds worth spending the money on, meaning that we just went through a window, we spent a bunch of money on stuff that players that maybe he, you know, again, he's not blameless in any of this. Maybe he was overly confident in seeing what happened under Ange and thinking that the recruitment process and the quality of the squad and all of these things was higher than they probably were. That's been my view the whole time. That, you know, not enough good stuff's being brought to him. And again, when he's saying I want, effectively, if you take what he's said since he returned, we are now a net down of six players of what he would say is needed to get to what has said is the strategic level that he wanted to get to. And if the stuff that's being brought and put in front of him is not at that level, what is that level? That's the minimum. Carter Vickers, Jota, you know, that level of player, conceptually. I haven't seen, you know, even the rumored names. The only one that I've seen is even theoretically in that group is the Dutch striker, Kvistgaarden. That's been rumored and talked about. And I did do a benchmarking process on him, and he looks legit. Outside of that, I haven't even in the rumored name. So I could see that's the positive spin on this, is that we're going to maybe migrate towards a better process as far as what segment of the market to address. But that's the worry, because I have heard or seen no evidence that the club have that appetite to structurally move up the market that we're shopping in to the kind of 5 to 8 million area and bump up the wage bill. We keep spending a lot of money on a lot of mediocre players and spreading our bets and having this bloated squad. So, you know, maybe this is turning, that's my optimistic part, is that getting rid of a bunch of these players, whittling down the squad, getting guys out on loan, selling guys like Turnbull, if that goes through, and all these other things, is to create the bandwidth in the wage bill in order to, you know, upgrade, go quality over quantity.
Yeah.
Ida is not it. No. So Ida is evidence of a transition period. This goes back to the whole other conversation about how the hell is this happening now with what's at stake between now and June is ludicrous. But I, you know, that's the positive spin, is if we can somehow still win the league, that maybe what needs to get done is going to happen in the summer, because it doesn't look like it's happening now.
Yeah. Well, like, my expectations going into the January transfer market are always quite low. Like, it is very difficult to get good signings in January. That's just a fact across the board. There's just a couple of issues that just niggle away at me in terms of, I think the Ida deal encapsulates a lot of issues within the board. The first is, and apologies if I think I'm correct in saying that Van Hooijdonk from Bologna was Celtic's number one target as a striker. Am I correct in saying that?
I who knows? Like he was rumored,
or he was rumored as a target. So, I just wanted to make sure because I've been off Twitter for a while. So I just wanted to make sure I had the right name. So Van Hooijdonk is now linked with a move to Norwich from Bologna. So Norwich seemed to be, you know, shedding off a little bit of load in Ida to make way for Van Hooijdonk to come to the club. So for me, that screams a little bit of board talk. Norwich said, we're going to take Van Hooijdonk. We're sort of taking over your turf here. We'll give you Ida as a little bit of sweetener to just get it over the line. And there's just a handshake in a boardroom and this happens without Brendan Rodgers' consent. That's number one issue for me in terms of if that is what's happening here. The second issue that I have here is that Ida, I think most people would agree, is not going to be a starter for Celtic. He's probably going to struggle to even, you know, push O out of the second starter position in the striker position. And if this is a situation where the board have brought in Ida as a sweetener to either Rodgers or the fans just to quieten things down, you're playing with someone's career there. That, like, I know Ida's agent has to agree to it. Ida has to agree to come up to the club. But I'm sure they're not saying to Ida that, oh, you're going to be the third choice striker here. You're going to be a backup player. I'm sure they're saying to Ida, you're going to be pushing for the starting team. And I don't think that's fair, because if Ida flops at Celtic and Celtic flop in the second half of the season, that is a young player you are putting in the firing line as the scapegoat for what went wrong this season, just like Shane Duffy was the scapegoat for what went wrong throughout the COVID season. And I just don't think that's fair to do to someone's career if you're thinking of from a personal standpoint with Ida in mind. This it shouldn't be down to him being a scapegoat for the rest of the season if the problems are in the board level and in the sort of recruitment level. I don't know if I did an absolute disgusting job of trying to explain what I'm trying to talk about there, but Alan, do you kind of get the gist of what I'm saying there?
Yeah, I mean, it's football and it's a nasty business, unfortunately, and people's feelings often don't come into it. I mean, I think, so this is going to be what I'm about to say, some might frame as board apology stuff, but what I want to actually do, what I will do, is we need to be also a little bit realistic about the whole market and environment in football at the moment. And I think some people just expect Celtic to go out and buy three or four players and what have you. But if you notice what's happening in the actual market, a lot of the European football market is driven by what happens in the English Premier League. It's the wealthiest league. It's the league that generally spends the most money. And they simply haven't been doing that in January. I think there's I don't know what's happened today. I've not really been online much. But, you know, up until maybe a few days ago, there'd been maybe 50 million spent in the whole window. And that was 20 million of that was Tottenham buying one player. Now, last January, there was 800 million spent in January. So in England, they're simply not spending money. And a lot of that has got to do with, there's a few reasons for it. One of which is the regulatory environment. So the English football authorities are getting very active in terms of implementing their own version of financial sustainability rules, and we've seen Everton and Nottingham Forest on the being penalised, docked points, fined, etc., for failing in terms of some of the cost control, some of these pillars of FSR. And a lot of that's political. A lot of it is because the English football authorities are trying to show that they're in charge, that they've got control of the game, because they don't want to have this independent regulator foisted upon them by the government, you know, so they're getting tough on clubs. But also, you know, over a three-year period under UEFA FSR, the cost control measures start to get a lot more onerous, so that by not next season, but the season after, your wages can't be more than 70% of your football income. And so we're kind of, next year it goes down to 80%. So that's exercising the minds of a lot of boardrooms in England, and that's part of the reason why you know, there's not a lot of activity going on at the moment. There's essentially a logjam in player movement in England, and if there's a logjam there, that has a contagion effect across the rest of Europe. So that's the environment that Celtic are operating in. You know, and it's not just regulation. You know, and you know, even though there are, as well as one Scottish club, there are at least four English clubs on an FSR watch list at UEFA level. The other thing is that, you know, that some of the transfer activity in the last year or so has been fueled by the Saudi League. Well, that's kind of been reined back massively now. The Saudis just aren't spending the money that they had been spending in the summer and over the year before that. So, you know, that again, that has taken a lot of liquidity and movement out of the market. And in fact, you know, there's mutterings from some players that are over there that they want to come back. Jordan Henderson's always given up, almost given up. Karim Benzema seems to be wanting to give up on it. So that was a sort of you know, disruptor, but also something that was adding a lot of liquidity to the market. That's not happening anymore. And then the third thing is we've got two major you know, continental competitions going on at the moment in the African Cup of Nations and in the Asian Cup. Now, you know, there's at least 31 players from the English Premier League at the African Cup of Nations. There's 8 at the Asian Cup. And across Europe, clubs have got a lot of players in these competitions. What does that mean? It means that, you know, those players are not really in the market or on the market. And it also means that clubs are not selling players they might have sold because they don't have currently, you know, a lot of their players are away, you know, on international duty. So and that these tournaments run until the middle of February. So, you know, they came at a time when the transfer window was open. So all of those things have served to make this almost a unique transfer window. If you look at the last 10 years in terms of lack of movement, lack of liquidity, and Celtic, you know, are a victim of that, as are many clubs in terms of their ability to get deals done. So I think we've got to be fair to the club in that respect. So moving on to things that are maybe not as fair to the club then, as I've been saying for a long
You're
time.
You're a bored apologist, Alan. You're a bored apologist.
I know. As I've been saying for a long time.
Is Dermot Desmond paying you to be on this podcast, isn't he?
Absolutely, yeah. Another loyal puppet. Loyal puppet. I can't even... Easy for me to say. Yeah, listen, as I've been saying, and I think when we recorded in the summer, I said, you know, for my to-do list, the biggest issue is we've got far too many players. Until we don't reduce the wage, because Celtic are not immune from these FSR cost control constraints as well, right? We've got about 30 players. We've got 11 players out on loan, and we've got 30 players in the first teams. Well, it's too many, right? And we've done a really bad job of trimming the squad. And we can't just keep adding players to it and keep adding to the wage bill. It's ludicrous. So that's another reason why I think we're kind of not been doing as much business. But you know, having said all that, I think what James was talking about, I completely agree with. You know, if you look at what we've moved from kind of what we know to what we can speculate by what we see, you know, we've got over the last week, we've had one of Peter Lowell's, you know, favorite bloggers making quite stunning attacks on Rodgers, right? Which, you know, it suggests to me all is not well behind the scenes in that regard. And I think what I've heard is very similar to what James says, which is that, and if you read a certain blog today, you can read between the lines on this, which is that Rodgers is being presented with players he simply doesn't think are good enough to come to Celtic. I think James was being quite generous and saying that, oh, that might be to do with cost control and so forth, budgets, etc. And that I accept that there could be an element of that, and it may equally be an element of, you know, we just don't have the standard of recruitment people to actually form the relationships, to do the work, etc., needed to get, you know, the really high quality players identified. So I think, having said all that, it's a different, as I said, to summarise, it's a really difficult environment in general in football at the moment for transfers. I think we have to accept that and recognise that will have an impact on Celtic for many reasons. But at the same time, it doesn't look to me as if, based on the evidence in my eyes, it doesn't look to me that the club are doing very well by Rodgers in terms of what they're presenting to him from a recruitment perspective. And clearly, to me, there's tension there, which is not a good thing.
Yeah. This podcast is sort of like a mixture of torture and therapy in the way that you're trying to find new ways of speaking about what's going on, and it always comes back to the same underlying issue. Like people who have, you know, daddy issues, and it always comes back to that in therapy. It's like, no matter what the problem is, it always comes back to the childhood. And now with Celtic, it's like, we cannot have a discussion around whether this guy is good enough to come to the club without discussing the board level and the recruitment and everything that we've spoken about on multitude of occasions on the podcast. In terms of the outgoings, I think that's an interesting point, Alan, because without stressing the analogy too much, because it's not perfect, Celtic are sort of like in the position where Manchester United are in, where the recruitment has been so bad over the last couple of years, but the prestige of playing for Celtic and Man United and the wages that come from that, some of the players within the club, why would they leave? Because they'll never get to play for a club with the prestige of Celtic or the wages that Celtic can offer them. Because ultimately, if Celtic try to sell them, they'll be selling them for pennies to a League Two side, a League One side, or some side in like the Bulgarian second division. You know, like that's the reality of some of the players that are at the club that have not played at all, almost. And then you have the board unwilling to offload these players for those pennies, because it's almost saving their faces a little bit that it would be admitting that, oh, these 10 players, by the way, we brought them to the club for a combined 5 million. We're selling them for a combined 125,000. That's our bad. They don't want to do that. So it's sort of a mess at the minute. And you do need to ship those players out to bring new players in. It's just going to take a powerful man. And James, that's ultimately the issue here. And probably what Alan's touching on is there are probably three names I can throw out to you now. One being Brendan Rodgers.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The other one being our overlord, Mr. Dermot Desmond, and the other one being the guy who apparently isn't running things in the background by the name of Lol. And I'd say all three of them want to pull the club in a different direction, and all three of them want to be the deciding factor of where the club goes, and there's a lot of tension within that because they all have different ideas. So I would imagine that's probably the crux of what we're seeing right now with why it looks so muddled. I would say it looks muddled because it is muddled.
100%. And I think that the, you know, when you come back to this issue of tiering the marketplace and where we're targeting the population of players that we're vetting for recruitment purposes, you know, you have the wage bill, the transfer fee, and then, you know, the unique market dynamics of going to Celtic in Scotland. And, you know, the issue, the market has shifted dramatically in the last 5 years. And I would argue even within the last 18 months, you know, what you are seeing, you know, everyone's watching Romano's Twitter feed and you see, you know, all the deals that are coming through, you know, you're seeing bigger clubs shopping down market. You know, so where you are seeing the volume is in, you know, price ranges that you would theoretically think that Celtic would be competitive in. You know, in that $5 to $10 million dollar, euro, or pound range, whether that's clubs like you know, I there's a benchmark I used here because again, to me it's kind of a perfect example of the arc, the development arc of a Celtic quote unquote player that's going to FC Dallas. Okay, and this guy's Pete. I've never heard of him or seen him before, but he's Peter Musa. So he was at Benfica. So Benfica's just sold this guy for 10 million euros, apparently, to FC Dallas, which, yeah, I don't follow the MLS that much, but that's kind of a run-of-the-mill MLS club. That's, you know, so that's a middle class to even below that. You know, that's not LAFC. That's not LA Galaxy or Inter Miami or, you know, the Citigroup club in New York. You know, they're not a big spender. Seattle, like, they are not a big club in MLS. And they're buying a 25, soon to be 26-year-old striker from Benfica for 10 million euros, who had been sold to Boa Vista from Slavia Prague for 4.25 million, and then sold from Boa Vista to Benfica for 5.5. Okay, and he came through some club at Zagreb and then got bought by Slavia Prague. So where are we at in getting that 4.25 slot when he's 22 and 5.5 million? Like that's the level that we should be buying theoretically. Like that's, I think, aspirationally what we've been talking about mostly, with maybe a stretch to that 10 million range for that player to put you over the top for the Champions League to get that third slot or to be competitive into the late rounds in the Europa League. We're not even there. Like that's not where we're shopping. We're in the 1 to 3 million pound area. And the problem with that is that market is picked over, you know, big time. A lot of, you know, almost everybody, including the big clubs now, are shopping and picking over that because they're going younger and younger and younger in that price range in order to attract talent. So our ability to identify the talent at that price point with the associated wage bills that we're targeting, you know, it's a stress testing of a system that's not working well anyway, right? So we're looking for needles in haystacks with blind people, you know, to be a bit absurd about it. So we're causing our own problems by not, you know, shopping in market segments that are going to be higher priced. But again, if we're not going to do this now, when are we going to do it? You know, with probably, and again, this is nuanced, it's not actually what it's going to be released at, but tell that to all the supporters that are about to see possibly $100 million in the bank balance when the interim report comes out. And that's possible. Like we might see that number, or it might be in the 90s plus. Coming out of the Champions League money and all that stuff. And again, it's a timing issue. That's not all cash that's actually at the club permanently. A lot of that has to eat up expenses in the second half of the season, the way that cash flows work at the club. But that's going to come out after this window's closed, probably within the next week or two. That's going to go over, you know, as I've joked before, like a wet fart at Christmas dinner. That is going to be, you know, and we can't ratchet up the wage bill structure some in order to buy 5 to 7 to 8 million pound players. And yes, it is going to be riskier. That's de facto. that's why you've got to have the right people doing the recruiting and doing the analysis and, you know, running all of this stuff. There's still business being done at the price points that we would be active theoretically. But, you know, this goes back to what's being brought to Rodgers. Kuhn's a marginal player, right? And again, mm-hmm. he's a 24-year-old who went for $3 million. What do you think he's going to be? He's probably not, you know, he's not Jota, you know, or wasn't Jota as far as pedigree, even. Mm-hmm. So, you know, to expect some of these guys to, everyone to be Matt O'Reilly or the outliers that you pick off for peanuts, you know, or another Van Dyke or some of these things. I mean, those are unlikely to happen with any kind of frequency.
Speaking of Jota, there is word that he might be going to West Ham, which would be.
And then they kicked it back now. Yeah, that collapsed, they said. Yeah, so.
Okay. I would have loved to see that. That would have been great. They've got some absolute ballers at West Ham at the minute. It's very funny that they're playing under David Moyes. Can we run through some quick rumors that I'm seeing across Twitter? Because I haven't been on Twitter, so I've seen none of the real rumors at all. I've just been kind of monitoring things that have been reported. So Celtic have knocked back offers for James McCarthy. And the word, according to Twitter, is that, and I'm using Twitter as my source, I know. I'm supposed to be a journalist here. But the word is that they wanted them to pay a higher percentage of the wages. So it was a Greek side. So instead of letting him go out on loan and letting them pay some of his wages, Celtic have decided to keep him at the club and pay all of his wages. So it's great to hear. It's great to hear. The next one, Alan, this one is actually quite funny. Larwin Kazawa from PSG, a left back who is labeled a misfit in the online articles. Misfit generally means asshole. So are Celtic going to sign a 20 million left back from PSG who's an asshole and is getting paid over 100 grand a week?
to back up Greg Taylor.
he likes an injury as well, doesn't he? I don't think he's the most reliable.
He's
just like off an ACL.
He's played like 8 games in a couple of years.
Right, oh, brilliant. The whole Adam Eda thing last night just made me very grumpy, and I've not really recovered since then.
Yeah, it's such a bizarre time. So, look, we don't have long left on this podcast, but in terms of where we go from here, because it can't all be doom and gloom, right? So there has to be some pressure point to this where, okay, so the transfer window, January transfer window wasn't good. Let's move past that and move on to the rest of the season. So, Alan, like, one summer has passed. One January transfer window has passed. The results aren't awful. The performances aren't great, which is the main pressure point for Brendan Rodgers at the minute. He's won two derbies, which has definitely given him a little bit of wiggle room in terms of the league. But if there's tension in the boardroom with Brendan Rodgers, like there was last time, I mean, he left the club on very bad terms. Even if he wins the league, like, is this something that we should really be worried about, that, like, you know, Brendan Rodgers might just leave at the end of the season, even if he wins the league? Because suddenly what he referred to as a well-run club with good systems now in place has seemed to collapse around him in his first year.
Yeah, well, I mean, I suspect, you know, in any sporting club where there's lots of alpha males, these kind of tensions are probably not unusual, but... you know, we do fixate on them, obviously. It's a tricky one. I get the impression, it is just an impression, really, that there's a belief within Celtic that inherently we've just got a better squad of players in terms of the SPFL, and that's enough to win the league. Now, that might well be true, and I wouldn't necessarily disagree with that, but there's a lot of risks, as we've been talking about. I mean, I've been looking today to come back to data and performance and what we normally sort of talk about. I've been looking today at our sort of defensive part of the stats, really been ploughing through StatsBomb, looking at XG per shot and so forth. And it's rather alarming that last season we gave up the lowest XG per shot of any team in the league, and this season we're giving up the highest. I mean, that's remarkable, actually, for Celtic to be top of the league and giving up the highest XG average per shot of any team in the league. That's remarkable. It's also remarkable
that... this is the wrong way to ask this question, but do you have that per capita in the sense of what's the percentage level in the amount of those?
Yeah, so I think last season it was something like... this is per shot, so we're talking about a very small number here. So something like last season, it was something like 0.081 XG per shot average. And this season it's gone up to 0.11, which is about a 42% increase. It is a 42% increase.
Is that over the same amount of shots, though?
It's actually more shots. So it's a worse outcome, or a worse quality of shot that we're facing in terms of better quality of shot for the opposition. And we're giving up more shots. And we're also giving them up closer to goal. Last season, we were the best in the league at restricting opponents to shooting from, I think it was an average of over 17 metres per shot. That's gone down to about 14.5, which is actually the worst. We allow shots closer to our goal more than any other team in the league, which is remarkable, considering how unbalanced the league is. So things like that have been kind of worrying me, I suppose. And then, you know, you look at... I actually got the two shot mats from this season and last season, and I just looked at them like this. Like, if you look at them very quickly, what you see is the number of shots like moving closer and closer to goal this season compared to last season. It's just remarkable, and the number of shots that are just closer to the actual physical goal in the 6-yard box has just gone up substantially. You know, we've got a goalkeeper. So StatsBomb, we've got this metric. I think James will be able to explain this better than me. But basically, they look at every shot and they work out what is, based on historical outcomes, what would be the optimal position for the goalkeeper to have stood in, just a starting position for them to have potentially saved that shot, and how far from that optimal position is the goalkeeper. And no goalkeeper in the league is, on average, further from the optimal position than Joe Hart. Now, there is a number associated with this, which is 1.89, but nowhere, and I've looked all the way through the internet on this, nowhere does StatsBomb explain what that 1.89 is. Is it centimetres? Is it inches? Is it metres? What is it? So I don't know what the number means, but I just know that Joe Hart's the worst at it in terms of
yards.
They don't do yards, though. Everything else they do, things like aggressive distances and what have you, is all in meters. But 1.8 meters is huge. It's like it can't be centimeters, which is obviously quite small margins. Anyway, that's an average. That's like an average. That's each and every shot, right? So I'm looking at things like that, and I'm just thinking, you know, that kind of, you know, worries me, I suppose. Things like that, really. You know, we know the rest of the league isn't very good. We did have a good run of form, which, you know, then we had that really odd performance against Ross County, which was incredibly flat and frustrating, and that's kind of got everybody worried a bit as well. But yeah, I am concerned. To me, Celtic should be miles ahead in this league. Even if Clement is a sensible manager, which he seems to be, he should still be miles ahead given the resources and so forth. So I'm still concerned, I have to say.
If you look at the league table, or just the very basic stats rather than going in depth, at the amount of goals Celtic have scored this season, which is 54 goals scored compared to last season at the end of the season. So after 38 games, Celtic had scored 114 goals. So we've got to basically double or the amount of goals we've scored this season in the space of 15 games to make, or even just like get close to how many goals we scored last year. And we also have conceded over half the amount of goals that we conceded all last season. So we need to score double and concede half as many goals for the rest of the season for us to even just have parity with last year's season, which I'll remind you all petered out in the last 6 weeks. So yeah, it's certainly, there's definitely, I think I maintain with my point, James, is that the results have actually sort of been there. Like Celtic are kind of results wise still petering along in the same manner as they would normally every season. They've lost three games this season so far, is it? Two games so far in the league, and they usually lose between three and four. So like the margins are quite thin in the terms of the results, but it's the performances that worry us. Like Alan's pointing out, the underlying numbers are bad, and then the actual numbers themselves are bad as well.
Yeah, the competitive dynamics are nip and tuck heading into this, were nip and tuck heading into this window, meaning that the kind of really any way you slice and dice the underlying metrics is, you know, coin flip territory. And the fact that from a results perspective, Rangers were able to close the gap now to functionally 2 points if they win their game in hand, again, with two derbies left, you know, it was 100% in coin flip. And I thought we probably, if we did decent business in the window, would keep that lead, marginal lead, you know, kind of like 55-45. I was kind of tilting. I think given what's going on with the injury situation and what it looks like our window may be looking like it's going to be, and at the flip side, I think Rangers have at least recruited one very good player in the midfielder that they signed. Again, within the context of, you know, market dynamics and, you know, the amount that they spent, and one that might be good, that, you know, is a flyer kind of a prospect. And that, you know, again, theoretically might do some things. That's more than we've done on a net basis. And we've talked about the concern about the keeper situation between the two clubs. So I'm and I take no pleasure in thinking this. It's got me quite disturbed, actually, is I think the value for money at this point is on Rangers winning the league, meaning that we're the bookies have us as still a firm favorite. I don't think that's the case anymore. I think we're in the window now of, I'd probably put Rangers as a slight favorite over us. I mean, you've got this issue with Carter Vicker. I mean, if we are looking at the rest of the season, where the availability of Hatate and Carter Vickers are now questionable. I mean, that's really bad news. that you know, if whatever's going on with Carter Vickers' knee and hamstring or whatever it is something that he's going to have to manage, or, you know, there's even rumors he might be out for an extended period again. And Hatate looks like that's another multi-week, if not, you know, month or two type of pull again. You know, that, I don't know. It's not what I was hoping for coming into the window and coming out of it. And again, back to this idea of what's at stake with winning the league this season. The fact that we've devolved to this point, where again, I'd say best case, a reasonable person would put it, you know, maybe 60-40 if they're being, you know, through green and white colored glasses. And, you know, it's kind of ridiculous that that's where this has been allowed to devolve to.
Yeah. Alan, final question. So, like, just to follow up from what Jim said there, I think fans and Celtic fans in particular are naturally pessimistic, but I think pessimism might be a bit of a realism in this scenario. Like, I do agree with James. I think it is going to come down to the wire at this point by the end of the season. And it looks to me like it's going to be Celtic are going to be hanging on for dear life by the end of the season if they're still top of the table. Essentially, what we need to happen is for Celtic to continue on the results, even if the performances aren't there. We need them to continue with the results. We probably need Rangers to drop points along the way somewhere, and we need them not to gain ground on us in the two derbies that we have left in the season. So from me, from my perspective, it looks like everything has to go Celtic's way from now until the end of the season, and everything has to go against Rangers from now against to the end of the season. And based on the underlying numbers of both teams, that's not the way it's trending.
Well, there's lots of different inputs and, you know, expected points models and so forth still have Celtic kind of to win probably by 4 or 5 points, actually. So it's not all doom and gloom. But then, you know, I think the way I look at it is, you know, for me, if it comes down to a tight title race, the best defence usually wins, right? And we don't have the best defence in the league. And that's what's worrying me, actually. I mean, I've been mainly exercised by the wing play most of the season. I still think that's an issue. I think it's criminal. We're criminally underutilizing Kyogo. It's shocking the level to which his strengths are not being played to, actually. And it's mainly down to, you know, the service that he's getting. And I don't know why we're not improving on that. However, you know, we have, accept your point that we're not going to match last season's, you know, prolific season, but we're still in attack. We're still pretty decent, still averaging a good number of goals, XG and all that. We're probably leading the league, actually. You know, we've got the best attack in the league, let's be honest about it. So that's all good. But defensively, as I said, some key metrics, it's not just that we're second defence, we've actually got the worst defence in some key aspects. We've actually got the worst defence in the league, which is alarming. It's shocking, really. And as I say, a good defence will generally beat a good attack if you want to come down to a tight race. So hence, you know, the unavailability. And part of the reason for this has been the disruption at centre-back, where, you know, whereas we had Carter Vickers and Jens for the first quarter of last season, then we had Carter Vickers and Starfelt until the league was won, and they were a pretty steady combination. This season we've had six different combinations. The only constant has been dear old Liam Scales, and it's been, you know, an ever changing rotation of and that has an impact to the team in terms of the stability. Add into that, you know, a goalkeeper that, you know, isn't, you know, as James has said, is a plant pot as far as moving off his line, and all the evidences were, he's coming for even less balls, and we're allowing the opposition even closer to our goal, and his positioning is as bad as any goalkeeper in the league. You know, these are all risks that in the big games can manifest into the odd goal in a big game where it matters. So, as James says, it's far too close to call now, and that's in itself is a shocking indictment of the club, really. Sorry, that's a bit doom and gloom, but it's kind of where we are. And as I say, I think the summary from the three of us really seems to be that, you know, we haven't actually done anything in this window to mitigate all those things which we have talked about during the season, but we just perhaps hope that with people coming back from injury and with recruits in January, that we'd address some of these issues. That doesn't seem to be the case.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. All right, I need to go catch a train. So that is where we will wrap up the podcast for this week. Apologies again for the delay in bringing the podcast back, but we should be back to semi-regular scheduling at least over the next couple of weeks. The Celtic take on Aberdeen this week, so we will be back next week with our regular sort of breakdown of that game, and it won't be all just grand scheme talk. It will be some actual football talk as well on top of that. So until then, catch us in the usual places, and we'll catch you next week. Good luck.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.